elderly aunt, and when the box of photos came out, and it's slowly we went through them. So no, you won't be seeing 1,000 photos. But I really appreciate that they documented this trip for us. Thank you to Merv. He helped me get this all set up, and he prodded me to come up with something a little more ambitious than I had initially planned. So that's good. And finally, thanks for the invitation. I must say, we've been gone from here 12 years, and I still feel right at home. First, like a good teacher, I need to set the scene for you. I remember Frida Keppel saying to me, when I did ladies' Bible class, she said one day, after the class was over, she said, I like you. She said, first you tell us where we're going, and then you tell us when we get there. And I thought, yeah, that's what a good teacher does. So first of all, I'm going to tell you where we're going, and of course I'll tell you when we get there. I'm going to first tell you a bit about the Battle of Vimy Ridge. I'm not assuming that all of you know the story of it. Then I'm going to share some of the high points of our trip to go to the 100th anniversary. Then I'm going to take you on a little detour and show you just a few other places and significant moments on our trip. And then finally, I'm going to return to my sense of the meaning of this pilgrimage that we went on. So let's begin. Oh, this is telling me it doesn't like something. No, we're good. Okay. As a child, I just loved the story. I loved that thought that my own grandfather had participated in an event that in the end was a central part of Canada's history. You'll know the back of the $20 bill, all of us, the picture of Vimy Ridge. So it's a very important part of our country's history. In February 1916, my grandfather enlisted in the Canadian Expeditionary Force. By July, he was far from Winnipeg, far from his wife and his young sons. That's my dad, the little two-year-old, dressed like his daddy, right down to the puppies. By September, he was in the trenches of the Western Front, participating in the final weeks of the Battle of the Somme. Following the Somme, which had been an absolute disaster, lasted for about 4.5 months, 1 million British casualties, the Brits made plans for a large-scale operation for the spring of the following year, the Battle of Arras. The Canadians, distressed, alarmed by what they had seen of the British command, requested their own assignment, and they requested control of their own troops. The four divisions of the Canadian Corps were placed under the command of General Julian Byng, who later became one of our Governor Generals, and Arthur Currie, and they were given an impossible task: to take Vimy Ridge, the most highly fortified German position on the Western Front. Now, hard to see, but if you see in the background is a picture that Paul took from the other side of Vimy Ridge. You can see the two pylons of the ridge in the distance. I love this quote. This comes from the speech that the Queen gave on the 90th anniversary of the Somme, or of Vimy Ridge. This is what she said. In any national story, there are moments and places, sometimes far from home, which in retrospect can be seen as fixed points about which the course of history turns, moments which distinguish that nation forever. Those who seek the foundations of Canada's distinction would do well to begin here at Vimy. Until this day, 90 years ago, Vimy Ridge had been impregnable, a lesson learned at terrible cost to the armies of France and Britain. They had tried, they'd lost 250,000 men trying to take the ridge. For the Allies, this ridge had become a symbol of futility and despair. It was against this forbidding challenge that the four divisions of the Canadian Corps were brought together as a single army for the first time. And here is a map, and I'll just come over to it. I just want to point a couple of things out to you. Here's, of course, the monument right there. You're going to see some pictures a little bit later from some of the villages that we went to. This one here, Givenchy en Goële. Arras is further down. There's Lens. I'll be pointing that out later. And just for interest's sake, in a minute I'm going to mention this cemetery. It's called La Chaudière Military Cemetery right there. And we'll come back to that in a minute. The Canadians took on the challenge and adopted a unique, a refreshing approach, meticulous planning and practice. One of the first things they did is General Arthur Currie was given the job of coming up with the plan. And I love what he had posted on his desk. This is what he had. Things to remember. A thorough preparation must lead to success. Neglect nothing. And he didn't. One of the things that he found, interestingly enough, there had been many men at the Somme. Obviously, they died of lots of things. But one of the things, been very badly injured on the barbed wire that was all throughout no man's land. Cut and terrible abrasions. And he did his research and found a particular shell that had just been adopted or had been developed that could take out barbed wire. When it hit it, it exploded and tore it apart so that the men could get through that. This is one of my favorite things, the next thing of their plan. Every man was let in on the plan and given maps. Every enlisted man. This was a huge boost for morale among the enlisted men. And this was one of the things that really was quite a point of contention with the British. They said, now listen, your army, I mean, it's made up of farmers and fishermen, laborers. You can't give them the plan. It has to only be in the hands of the officers. And the Canadians came back at them and they said, look at what happened at the Somme. You have a lower level officer with his 20 or 25 men under his command. He's the only one who knows what they're doing. They come out of the trenches. He's taken out first. Now you've got these men wandering around. What are they going to do? They said, no, this is we insist on. They're going to have it. And I love this quote. We placed absolute trust in our men and took them entirely into our confidence. We were confident that no one would divulge the information, and no one did. After months of suffering, just desperate cold and wet winter there, the winter of 1916, 1917. The men rehearsed and practiced on scaled replicas of the German system of trenches. The way they got a hold of this is, Currie had this idea that he would send out small groups of men at intermittent times to go on what were called trench raids. The Germans, because they believed that the hill would, the ridge would never be taken, didn't connect the dots and realize that what these men were actually doing was reconnaissance. And they were finding out the system of trenches. You'll know that the trenches, it's not just one line, it was line after line after line. So they knew ahead of time what that whole German trench system looked like. And they practiced. They literally had white tape, and behind the lines, they practiced for days on end. They developed this elaborate labyrinth of underground tunnels, actually dug by Welsh miners, that were designed for secret movement of the troops, and then on the day of the battle for the element of surprise. So we'll come back to that later. I've got some more pictures of that. And then finally, they took what was called the creeping barrage, and they refashioned it. They called it the Vimy Glide. The way it worked was, I've got this written down, I guess. What would happen is the men actually, and they said they started this the beginning of March, so this is like about 5 weeks before the battle. The men practiced with stopwatches because split-second timing was going to be essential. Their guns were firing just ahead of them. And what would happen is it would pin down the first German line so that the men could get there, and either they would have taken out some of the German soldiers, or they kept them pinned down, and then boom, the Canadians are there. Now, obviously you couldn't get ahead of yourself. If you went too quickly, you'd be hit by your own guns. If you went too slowly, the enemy would recover, come out of their trenches and fire on you. So Julian Bing says, "Chaps, you shall go over exactly like a railroad train, on exact time, or you shall be annihilated." So at 5:30 in the morning, the 9th of April, 1917, an Easter Monday, as a driving snowstorm moved in from the west, the attack began. The sounds of battle heard across the channel in London. You can imagine the sound of that. The big guns opened up, the Canadians climb out of the trenches, and as the men had practiced, they moved in perfect sync. By afternoon, most of the ridge was in Canadian hands. 4 days later, the battle was over. This young private wrote home, "From the crest, the whole plain of Douai lay at our feet. The vista was one of peaceful-looking villages." So Canada's citizen army of farmers, fishermen, cowboys, university students, laborers, lumberjacks, and teamsters, like my grandfather, had done the unthinkable, but at a terrible cost. I told Fran I was going to be bringing this in. I happened to find a picture online of the grave of Fran's uncle, Corporal Thomas Caldwell from Yorkton. He was a 25-year-old student from the University of Saskatchewan. He served with the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, the PATS, and he was one of the 3,598 Canadians killed in the battle to capture Vimy Ridge. Almost 7,000 men were injured, some badly, like Charlene's grandfather. He lived with that for the rest of his life. Yeah. In 1922, the 85 hectares of land around the ridge were granted to Canada by a grateful French nation. And under the direction of Walter Allward, work began on a memorial. This picture is called The Ghosts of Vimy Ridge, and it's based on a dream that Walter Allward had. When he took on this huge responsibility, and you may know some of the story of that. It took him 14 years to pull this together, and an awful lot of pressure, because he wasn't quite like those trains on time. He had a dream, and he saw these men on the hill, the ghosts of Gimme Ridge. Finally completed it, not long before a more terrible war broke out in Europe. Interestingly enough, I remember one of my questions when I had first read about the building of Gimme Ridge, and I mean, it's a gorgeous thing. We're going to see some pictures in a minute. I thought to myself, why didn't the second German army, the Nazis, why didn't they blow it up? And apparently, Hitler loved it. He thought it was one of the most beautiful memorials he had ever seen. And he was clear, even though Arras again was leveled in places, very close there, it was under his orders that nothing was to happen to Gimme Ridge. Apparently, Walter Allward was beside himself when he knew that the Germans were coming back in, because he was sure that his masterpiece would be destroyed, but it wasn't. So as the saying goes, it was on my bucket list to see Gimme Ridge with my own eyes and to walk in my grandfather's footsteps. We applied to attend. You had to apply. We had to go through a fairly rigorous kind of security because France is under very tight security. We got our official tickets, and we joined 25,000 other Canadians on April the 9th to mark the 100th anniversary of the battle. With, as I said, security very tight in France, we were all shuttled from surrounding villages onto the site. And we had to be there 4 hours before the ceremony began. So it was a long day, let's put it that way. There was only seating for 5,000. There were 25,000 of us there. Amazingly, I mean, we stood for 10 or 11 hours, and we did it. Yeah. 3,598 pairs of boots were placed around the monument to honor the young Canadian soldiers who died at Vimy. And Princes William and Harry placed the final pair on the ridge. And my poor husband, for the last 6 days of his trip, he had to carry around a pair of those boots because I brought a pair back. Yeah, they were kind of heavy hauling around Paris and to the airports, but there was no way I was not going to bring a pair of those boots home. So maybe these boots are for your Thomas, right? Your uncle. Yeah. Or maybe they're the boots that, quite possible, eh? Who knows? Maybe they're the boots that Will and Harry. I don't think so. I think so. Before the ceremony began, I was interviewed by CBC's Nala Ayed, and I spoke of my book that I brought, and I brought my book here with me, full of names of friends and family. And I told her that I believe that Vimy is a Canadian family story. I have Charlene's grandfather in the book. I have Carol's grandfather. I've got your uncle. I've got just name after name after name of these young men. People's grandfathers and great-grandfathers. And then when we got over there, we met more people, and I added their names to my book. When we were just down visiting our son Paul and his wife in Hamilton in April, we went to visit, and I don't know how many of you remember Doug and Pat Youngblood, who they were only here in Regina for 4 years, and they live now just out of Hamilton, her uncle, his name is on the ridge, Thomas Rushton, so I have his name in my book. Then, noticing our matching t-shirts, a young journalist from France 24 interviewed us and snapped a photo. It was our 40th wedding anniversary. That's kind of, you can see how hot we are. Interesting. I went on Google ahead of time. What would the weather be like? 12 degrees Celsius. Okay. Well, the day before was 11 degrees Celsius. The day after was 12. The day off was 27. So now we're in our long sleeve shirts. You can see my cheeks. My British cheeks, as Doug McCall was saying, those red cheeks we get. Interesting little aside, and Marilyn, who was one of my bridesmaids when Henry and I got married, we were married on the 60th anniversary of Vimy Ridge. My grandfather was at the wedding. He was in his 90s. Amazingly, he survived and was able to be there. But we really couldn't mention that because Henry comes out of Mennonite roots, and his grandfather, who was there, was an avowed pacifist. So we had to cool that thought, paying tribute to Grandpa, who 60 years before had been on the ridge. Well, we'll have to leave that out of the story. So, but this time we could celebrate it. And after a long wait, the dignitaries arrived. Our daughter Catherine, who couldn't be with us, she lives in Brazil, was watching live streamed on from Brasilia with her little son, who's 2.5. And when he saw Prince Harry, he said, "Uncle Paul." And Catherine said, "No, no, that's Prince Harry." Well, our son Paul, you'll see in a minute, is a redhead with the beard. Douglas said, "No, Uncle Paul." And 5 biplanes of the First War circled the monument. That was amazing. The crowd was roaring, these 5 planes from the First War circling overhead. So it was a marvelous ceremony. I don't know how many of you watched. Obviously, I was talking to Gord and Brenda. They watched. With story and drama, dance, music, pageantry, speeches. Just an incredible experience to stand shoulder to shoulder with all these Canadians on a day when another generation had done the same. Incredible. Following the ceremony, you can see the sun starting to go down. Scores of students surged onto the memorial. There were 8,000 high school students there, and they were marvelous. I'm going to talk about them later. And as I'm watching them up there, and of course, the officials are trying to get them off the monument. I don't think it's going to fall down, but, you know, security. No, they weren't going anywhere. And I could imagine that they're up there thinking of 100 years before, when Canadian soldiers stood on the ridge. Young people, just like they were. So the sun set on just a wonderfully grueling, it was a grueling day. I mean, there was no food on the site. You had to stand in line for 35 minutes to get to a washroom. Most of us were standing, but it was unforgettable. And as we said to one another, when various ones of us who were standing there would start to complain, sort of like, okay, remember what was happening 100 years ago today. I think we're okay. I think we can stand for another hour. I think we can manage the blazing heat. So here's a picture of the 5 of us. There's our son Paul, Henry, of course, Kristen, me, and Paul's wife Andrea up at the monument. A little bit more of a close-up of the 4 of us. You can maybe see why Douglas thought that Paul's, that Prince Harry looked a little bit like Uncle Paul. There I am over on the eastern side. Stretching out before me is the Douay Plain. And if you can see the coal peaks of Lens, the twin coal peaks, which is really only about 10 kilometers away, it's the site of the Battle of Hill 70, where my grandfather was critically injured 4 months later. Imagine, that's how far they got in the next 4 months. Can't believe we're there. And this is the Spirit of Canada, this particular sculpture which stands there, imagined as a weeping mother grieving the lost sons. Incredible when you think of the commitment that our small country actually made. I was, being a teacher, of course, I was doing the math on this one. We were a country of just less than 8 million when the first war broke out. We sent over, 625,000 men were in uniform. That would be, it's the equivalent, when I did the math, that's 7.75% of the population. If we do the math based on today, it would be like sending 2.9 million of our citizens to war at this point in our lives. Incredible, isn't it? 20 sculptures up on the Vimy Monument, reminders of the terrible losses that we suffered. You get up there on the monument and you just don't want to leave. It's unbelievable. It's such a place. And then the names all around the base, the names of 11,000 Canadians who disappeared in France. They didn't, these ones, of course, didn't all die at Vimy. Some of them did, but they disappeared in France. And we met families that day who found the names of their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers, their great-uncles. In the trenches, they looked quite a bit better. They fixed those up for the, that's not the way they looked back in Grandpa's day. And then we went down into the Grange Tunnel, which is very deep. It came out right under the German trenches. This is the place, if you've seen any of the pictures, where these young soldiers who were waiting down there carved messages into the chalk walls. Just incredible to see those messages about their hometowns, about their families, about their country. The landscape, which is incredible when you think, I guess that's part of us being given this large plot of land. The decision was made to let some of the landscape just be the way it was. You can see that there actually were some even better pictures of these deep gouges in the land. And there's still so many unexploded shells near the surface that you can't put workers out there cutting the grass. As I was showing this to a child, they said, "Oh, lucky sheep." Fortunately, they're light. I don't imagine too many of them been lost, but who knows? There was a place where you could leave a message, and I left a message for my grandfather at Vimy. "I was here, Grandpa." And Kristen left a message. She quotes Senator Murray St. Clair from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He says, "Why can't we always remember?" Now I'm going to take you on a quick little detour, and then I'm going to come right back to the end. My grandfather's youngest brother had died at the Somme. And so we went down to his cemetery. It was about 25, 30 miles south of Vimy. He was with the Black Watch, which is one of the premier Scottish regiments. And there we are at his grave. We had trying to decide what was I going to take to his grave. No one in the family has been there since the 1930s. So I decided I gathered together memories from the family, and I wanted him to know that 100 years on, we have not forgotten him. He's not forgotten in his community, he's not forgotten amongst his family. On my mother's side, my grandmother lost 3 first cousins in the First War. That wouldn't be unusual. It turned out that Lamont's grave was only about 4 miles from Robert's, so I said, okay, we're going to see Lamont as well. He was a young law student at the University of Manitoba, an only child. His parents were absolutely brokenhearted and died shortly after Lamont's death. We went up to Lens, which is further north, to the Battle of Hill Set, where the Battle of Hill 70 was. They're building a memorial there, which was actually opened in August, but we got to look in over the fence. They weren't quite done yet. And then, because in another generation, my father, who was a little boy at the time of the First War, he had to go to war. And so we went up into Belgium, to Zillebeek, which is just across the border, where my father was stationed early in 1945. He had spent almost 18 months in Italy, just seen some horrendous fighting through there. He convoyed up into Belgium, and he stayed for 3 weeks in this little village. He said it was a respite from war, and then they went back to war and went in on the liberation of the Netherlands. And then we went up to the Menin Gate, and oh my goodness, that's engraved with the names of 55,000 British and Empire soldiers, including 8,000 Canadians who went missing in Belgium. You stand in there, and the scale of loss is just unfathomable, incredible. So now I come back to the end. And when I was interviewed by Nella Ayed, of course, she came and talked to us. She happened to see us in our matching outfits. And she came up and told me what she was going to ask me and gave me sort of 10 minutes to kind of compose myself a little bit and think. I first had to have a little cry, being who I am, and then it was all over. I was fine. But her last question, she hadn't prepared me for. And when I look back on it, I just went and watched it again this morning. I'm not satisfied with my answer. This is what her final question was. It was, what do you take away from this experience? And from this vantage point, there's several things I think about. One is, incredible, the connection to the landscape. I wasn't surprised. It was the same feeling I had the first time I went to Scotland, and it was like, I'm home. That's not to say this isn't home. I'm a child of the prairies. This is home, but Scotland was home. And this place was home. And this was the fascinating thing. I met so many people who told me the same thing. I met a man up at the Menin Gate, a First Nations man from Northern Manitoba, a principal, had brought 11 of his students to Vimy. And he said to me, how is it possible that a First Nations man from Northern Manitoba feels at home in this country? He said, I don't get it, but I feel it. This is my people were here. He has a great uncle whose name's on the Vimy Memorial, William Morisseau. I have him in my book. I guess, I mean, you can't go there and be there without this sense of respect for the sacrifice, the courage, the resilience of another generation. I mean, you just can't imagine, would we be capable of that kind of thing? Would we be capable of that life those men lived and the challenges they faced? And yet, I think to myself, I come from people of great strength. There's got to be something in there. The conversations we had with others from all over the Commonwealth, it was incredible. In Arras, we met a man from New Zealand who had come there. His grandfather had died in the Battle of Arras and had disappeared. His name is on one of the big Commonwealth or Empire memorials. And everyone wanted to tell their story. Everywhere you went, people were coming up to each other and telling the story. The students that we met, I loved them. They got on Paul's nerves. He's not a teacher. I get that. But I loved the students, and I was just so absolutely pleased to see how keen and well prepared they were by their teachers. Many of them had adopted graves of a particular man, and very much, you know, from all of these cemeteries all around that area, or the name of a man up on the memorial. And they wanted to know more, and they wanted to hear the stories of, why are you here? Tell me. Interesting, we kept running into them too. They were also in Paris. We went down to Paris for 5 days, and they were in their red hoodies with Vimy 100 Canada on the back. You could see them on the Champs-Élysées and the Notre Dame Cathedral, everywhere. But I would say that what I'm finally coming down to, almost 6 months on, when I look at this experience and I've distilled it down, what I keep coming back to is the gratitude of the French people. Everywhere we went, hundreds of Canadian flags flying in those villages around Vimy Ridge, posters, thank you, merci Canada. Just down the hill from Vimy at Givenchy-en-Gouin, school children had a display. They'd been doing research for a whole year on Canada and on the men who fought at Vimy, the Canadians. In fact, the whole village, and of course village is a bit of a misnomer, there's probably 8,000 to 10,000 people there, but we don't call that village in Saskatchewan, but they do. They called 2017 the Year of Canada. This particular town wanted 500 Canadian flags, and they didn't know how they were going to get a hold of it. And we ran into a gentleman who was taking people on a tour there, and he heard about their request. He was from New Brunswick. He went to the headquarters of Irving, which is a big conglomerate down in New Brunswick, and they packed up 500 flags and sent them over to the little village. In the central square in Arras, there were thousands of messages of thanks written on poppies. You can't really get a good feel of it there, but that's kind of a giant poppy, and then it's made up of all these small ones that are also in the shapes of poppies. And people from all over that area had written messages to the soldiers, the gratitude for those who came to free their city. Earlier on April the 9th, the mayor of Arras had paid tribute to Australia, to Britain, New Zealand, South Africa, but he saved the biggest thanks of all for Canada. And he told our Prime Minister, that the Canadian actions at Vimy Ridge were the turning point for our city and for France, we will always remember. Now, not a great picture. I pulled that one offline. There's a picture of the very same street and what it looked like at the time of Vimy Ridge, and then what it looks like today. How all of those Flemish houses have been rebuilt. I've only got two more slides, and then I'm done. But sorry.
No, it's fine. I think I may be going just.
Oh, I was hoping people weren't worrying about their parking. Yeah.
That's what she's worried about.
She's worried about parking. I know. As I told you, when people found out we were going to Vimy, so many friends came to talk to us. And two nights before we left, one of our good friends and his wife came over. Her great uncle died over there. And unknown to me, his great uncle died there. And when we got looking online, we realized that the village that we would be staying in, just south of Vimy, was about 2 miles from his uncle's grave, great uncle's grave, Albert Knapp. And I said, well, we're going there. We are going to go to your uncle's grave. So we went there the day before the big Vimy ceremony. Gorgeous cemetery, as these ones are. They're all over the place. Incredible. If you imagine 1 million men who have died, you know, lots of graves. And an older Frenchman came and started talking to us. And our daughter-in-law is quite fluent in French, and so we had a nice conversation. I told him the story of young Albert. He's surrounded by 35 other men, young Canadians, who all died on the same day in an attack. And he put his hand on Albert's grave, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "They came to help us. We cannot forget them." Incredible, eh? They came to help us. We cannot forget them. Wow. The last morning we were in Arras, before we caught the train for Paris, we went back to the center of town where you saw the pictures, and there was a market going on. And we're wandering around looking at people's wares, and a couple of women called me over to their table and said, "Oh, you're from Canada." And one of the women said, "Thank you. We're here today because of the Canadians." Just hard to believe, isn't it? We're here today, 100 years on, able to have this, you know, wonderful market to sell our wares, to live in peace, to rebuild our cities because of what the Canadians did. And when I think of the trip, like I said, when I distill this down, I think, wow, I was the recipient of the gratitude that was meant for my grandfather. I was the recipient of the gratitude on his behalf. And I like to think, from the time when I was a child and I heard about Vimy Ridge and I wanted to go, that I was drawn there for that very purpose. I just brought a few things. I know the time is such that I'm sure you're worried about that, but I brought a few little artifacts, and I just put them over there on the table. So what a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks, Merv, for making me do a much better job than I had planned.